This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at Will Pruitt and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, Mickey James' weird old storyline and The Shield's awesome new reunion. So, Jake, Raw has been a bit of a mixed bag lately, and one of the things that is mixed for me is Mickey James being emphasized more, because I don't know about you, but I sat around at home going, well, why aren't they using Mickey James more? She's great. She's experienced. She's someone who could easily anchor a story on Raw. But now I'm having a bit of a be careful what you wished for, the whole like monkey's paw type thing, because now I'm looking at what they're doing with her. And I've got to say that the story being Mickey James is old is real, real weird to me.
Yeah, I guess I don't believe they would take this same line of story with, you know, say, AJ Styles, who I believe is the same age. John Cena might be
older,
a little bit older,
actually. Yeah.
I just don't believe they would go through the old man or, you know, whatever stage of their male talents at this point in their careers. But Mickey James, at I think she's 38, is now, you know, apparently the old maid of the women's division on Raw, which I don't understand. I mean, at all, because I mean, she spent what, a decade away from the company or something like that, and came back, you know, looking fantastic, being in great physical shape, you know, not really missing a step in the ring in comparison to her old work. I mean, she might have slowed down slightly, but I think she's more than made up for it with, you know, with her improvements and experience and the ability to connect with a crowd. And so I really question, you know, the motives of how, why they chose this story for her when they suddenly, you know, needed a month or something until they got into a different state when with Asuka arriving, you know, at after TLC. It just seemed like something, well, we have to use Mickey for something. Oh, you're the old lady now. And it rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, it's really, really strange. So Mickey James is 38, like we mentioned. Someone on Reddit, user Angelus Cato, yeah, don't know if I pronounced that right, not going to try again, made a list of all of the wrestlers on WWE's active roster that are the same age or older than Mickey James. And you've got Samoa Joe, who's 38, Curtis Axel, Brian Kendrick, Tamina, Sheamus, Titus O'Neil, Sin Cara, John Cena, Jeff Hardy, Brock Lesnar, Bobby Roode, AJ Styles, Stephanie McMahon, Rhino, Shelton Benjamin, who just returned. And I don't think Shelton's story is that he is too old to get it done. Matt Hardy, again, just returned. If you ask Booker T, this is pure nostalgia. R-Truth, Big Show, Chris Jericho, Shane McMahon, Triple H, Goldust, and Kane. Whew! That is a whole lot of old people. If Mickey James is old enough to say where depends or something else, I would ask quickly whether this was a case of weird standards for men and women on the roster. But then I listed Tamina and Stephanie McMahon here. Is this just a case of weird standards for Mickey James?
That's a good question. She had some fairly bizarre stories thrown her way in her previous run with the company. You know, they didn't treat her well on her way out. You know, there was that whole
Piggy James
thing. Yeah. And, you know, I don't really understand their direction with her. And I think she's talented, and I think she's proven herself over and over again, you know, whether it's in the ring or, getting good matches out of lesser opponents, or, you know, even when it comes to versatility as both a babyface and a heel, I think she's shown that she can pull off both very well. I just don't, you know, it seems bizarrely ageist and something that they're not applying evenly, because we should be going through several stories on the main roster of people being ready to be put out to pasture if Mickey James is is the old woman in the women's division. And I guess, you know, just by relative age. I guess she's the probably, you know, other than Tamina, she might be the oldest. But I mean, what are they really telling us that, you know, once women tip over 35 and have a kid that they're useless as performers? I think that's a very strange standard to set.
That sounds like a pure Vince McMahon worldview.
It kind of does.
Yeah, no, I mean, it really does.
I don't know how to interpret it any other way. You know, if you're a male wrestler and you're over 40, they talk about you like, oh, he's a grizzled veteran, you know,
or he's just coming into his prime. I mean, you look at those wrestlers I just listed, and AJ Styles, I'd say, is still in, you know, his prime performing years. We've talked before about wrestlers earning older at this point, how a wrestler's prime earning years are like late 30s into their 40s. Undertaker wrestled until he was approximately 120, and he's may still be wrestling
somewhere. Yeah,
yeah. I think that WrestleMania main event is still happening, actually.
Yes,
entrance, either one.
I don't know that any male talent has ever encountered a story like this at 38. You know, it's just nothing jumps to mind in any promotion that I've watched over the years. You know, I think they're emphasizing this because they, you know, they have a particular worldview and they're casting younger talent. You know, I think some of the more recent recruits to the Performance Center on the women's side are, you know, in their early 20s, even late teens in some cases. So it really seems like they're skewing very young for the next generation of female talent. And I think that's, you know, that's a reflection of what they're looking for as a company. And unfortunately, Mickey James at 38, apparently, you know, by default becomes the old maid. Although, you know, like you said, Tamina and Stephanie McMahon won't get that treatment for whatever reason.
And part of the absurdity of this is they wouldn't do this for a male talent. We've seen many male talents wrestle until they are literally broken down, just old shells of themselves. And the story is very rarely until it gets to their retirement match about their age. Look at Ric Flair, for God's sakes, and how he went out in WWE. He was a train wreck towards the end. He brought it together in those last couple months. He had some amazing performances, breathtaking, really. But Ric Flair was old and broken down 2 or 3 years before he stopped wrestling in WWE. And the story was never about his age. He was just, you know, the veteran Ric Flair. Like you said, the grizzled veteran. It wasn't so much about, can he still get it done? It was, well, we know he can. He's Ric Flair. And we don't see that treatment for women. We're not seeing even women on WWE TV be allowed to age gracefully like Mickey. Because it'd be one thing if they said, Mickey James is a 20-year veteran of the sport. That's probably too large of a number, but you get what I'm saying. Mickey James has been wrestling for her entire adult life. She is experienced, and she is going to light the world on fire again. She's ready. She has that experience. It would be different if they were talking about her with the same kind of veteran reverence that they even give Matt and Jeff Hardy, or that they gave AJ Styles when he came in, or that they give Chris Jericho, who often looks insanely out of shape, especially lately. I am going to say it's, you know, I think people who listen to me on these things get tired of me saying things are sexist, but it's sexist. Like that's purely what it is.
Well, I mean, do you think, let's say they bring in Trish Stratus for one more match. I think she's in her early 40s at this point. Do you think they bring her in and just start calling her an old hag who, they're, you know, nobody's quite sure if she still has it? Do you think that would be the promotional tactic they would use for some kind of Trish Stratus dream match?
God, no.
So why use it with one of your contracted talent on your main roster? Like, it doesn't make any goddamn sense.
If you could get, say, Trish Stratus versus Asuka for a WrestleMania, or Trish Stratus against Charlotte or Sasha or Bayley or anyone that is kind of in that upper echelon of WWE women, I think they'd do it and they'd be showing Trish Stratus highlights. They would be rolling out the red carpet and they'd be showing training videos of her where she may say, hey, I'm a little bit older. You know, I've I've seen some things life-wise, but I'm smarter. I know, you know, I've only gotten better. I know exactly what I need to do now. I'm not going to mess around. That was the story even when Trish left. I don't understand why in the world they would do this with Mickey James, other than I honestly think Vince McMahon likes laughing at Mickey James. I think that's just his hobby. Like, I would say someone in that Vince McMahon, Kevin Dunn sphere of influence likes just mocking her. Because you look, we didn't get this version of Mickey James for the one NXT appearance she had against Asuka. That was fire. That was pure, this is the grizzled veteran coming in and she sees a big challenge and she wants to take Asuka down. But what we get now from her is old, depends jokes, just bad backstage skits that I'm, you know, they may do with a slightly older male talent. They might do it with Rhino someday, but not at 41, but they would never do with even, you know, with Triple H or with someone who is a main eventer or a 7-time world champion.
It's funny you bring up Rhino, because that dude has looked 46 years old for like 15 years.
He was, I think, the oldest ECW champion in history.
At like 29.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's hilarious just how different people age. It's pretty funny. But yeah, I honestly don't I don't understand the Mickey James thing, and I think you're spot on. It's something about her that they just can't resist writing these ridiculous you know, staring down their nose at her storylines where they get a laugh out of it. I don't understand what it is about her or her personality or her character or her attitude backstage that seems to get her labeled as somebody that they can do this to. But I don't know. I can't imagine, you know, that she came back to WWE thinking that this would be, you know, the type of content that she would be performing. I was assuming she, you know, and everybody did when she got signed that, hey, this could be, you know, a type of veteran gatekeeper like performer who could have great matches with a good number of these young women and try to elevate the division further. But that's been the furthest thing from what they've shown us with Mickey thus far. And I think it's a huge waste of talent and opportunity.
I would say part of this too, WWE doesn't handle aging well. It's actually something superhero stories generally don't handle aging well. Think about a superhero movie where you've actually seen the hero go through an aging process. And the only one I can think of is Logan. And that was made this year. And it was great. But since WWE doesn't handle aging, you go from young upstart to established main eventer to grizzled veteran forever. Like, grizzled veteran happens about 2 years in, and then you're a grizzled veteran all the way through the end of your career. They don't tell you stories about wrestlers getting older, getting smarter, getting, you know, maybe breaking down, maybe not being able to do the things they once could physically. And part of that, too, is, I mean, you look at AJ Styles on the roster, who is capable of damn near anything physically, and he's 40 years old. Maybe they don't need to tell that story with him, but they kind of skip the portion of stories where wrestlers are allowed to get old, where wrestlers are allowed to have to be different. And they do it for men, obviously. And I think you can tell that they are even more apt to skip it for women because Vince McMahon sees a 38-year-old woman and thinks she should be wearing Depends, which is just absurd.
Yeah, I wish I had a, you know, a more profound statement on it, but I think that's pretty much it. You know, there's some kind of philosophical problem with how the show is put together that separates, you know, 38-year-old women who are apparently, you know, old maids and 42 to 44-year-old men who are apparently still in the prime of their lives. Like it only breaks down to the people running the show have very, I guess, backwards and you know, strange opinions of women. It's, you know, it's a company run by troglodytes at this point.
If you like what we do here at ProWrestling.net and the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast, there are a couple things you could do to support us. First, leave us a review on the Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars, tell people why you like us. Those help get our show out in front of more people. The second, become a ProWrestling.net member. You can support the site and get ad-free access to the site, access to our member-exclusive audio reviews of Raw, SmackDown, NXT. Just because you don't hear it on this podcast doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And we also have the ProWrestling.net weekly audio show where Jason Powell usually runs through the news of the week and often breaks first-run news. He does a weekly Q&A every week for members as well, and you get bonus episodes of some shows like the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. If you want to become a ProWrestling.net member, for as low as $7.50 a month if you just want to try it out for a month, or $5.50 a month if you want to take the annual option. It knocks a couple bucks off. It's pretty great. Go to ProWrestling.net, click the membership link, and you can be signed up in minutes. Thank you guys so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of the show. Moving on to something non-troglodytic that the company did. How about that Shield thing at the end of Raw? I thought that was pretty damn cool, seeing Ambrose, Rollins, and Reigns together and nodding affirmatively again.
Yeah, I mean, they managed to, get a tease in there without going overboard. And I think it's kind of cool that next week they're going to be, I'm trying to think of the town, but it's the same arena they debuted in and the same arena they broke up in, for their reunion. So it's kind of a interesting nod to history there that WWE somehow manages to back their way into occasionally.
Yeah, that'll be a fun little factoid that I hope they mention at some point. So what do you think? One, who do you think the opponents are? It does look like maybe Miz, Cesaro, and Sheamus are going to be the opponents for the reunited Shield. And I've got to say, given the work Miz has been doing, he deserves to be there. I would love to see Miz replaced with Braun Strowman, just because I think Braun Strowman against the Shield would be, honestly, him against all three of them would just be fire. I would watch the hell out of that. But I think Braun Strowman maybe has something else to do. Not really sure right now, but the Miz in there, the guy deserves it. He has worked exceptionally hard in the last couple months building up to this. And I think Miz is really anchoring kind of the opposition and raising the status of it to a level I didn't think would be possible.
Well, they definitely made the right move substituting the Miz Taraj with Sheamus and Cesaro, because that would have been a disaster. I still don't know if the Miz will end up being the guy in that match. It may be a case of the Shield reuniting, and that scares the Miz off enough that Sheamus and Cesaro have to find a different partner. I don't know. I would love to see Strowman in that role, but I think you're right that the Miz, has earned the spot if that's who they decide to go with. I mean, he's not amazing in the ring, but I think in combination with the other guys, he'll be able to put on one hell of a match. And I'm sure next week, in that arena, on Raw, the reunion is going to be, magic, just like all of these once in a lifetime kind of special moments are. I doubt, at this point we're going to see a lengthy Shield reunion, but I think for kind of a one night only deal, it'll be a very cool thing to watch.
It will be really fun. I think that at the TLC pay-per-view, which was the pay-per-view the Shield had their first match at 5 years ago, it was in December then and not October, but still. Or November? What month is this? This is October. Okay, I'm good. I think that will be kind of magical. It's going to be really fun. I hope that the match lives up to whatever WWE wants it to be. I hope that everyone is able to bring that kind of performance that you expect out of the Shield. I mean, those Shield six-man tags were probably, I honestly think they were the single best thing in wrestling in the last decade, which is really, I think the Shield itself is. WWE's narrative universe has centered on the Shield. They have, especially with Roman Reigns becoming the guy after the Shield broke up, they have really built most of their storylines around the Shield when you look at Rollins, Ambrose, and Reigns as central characters, and them getting back together is a really big deal. Them having another match is a big deal, and those six mans they were in were fire. They were absolutely amazing, and I honestly always look at those as the reason Daniel Bryan got as over as he got as part of Team Hell No. I look at those as you know, the reason that kind of the modern WWE heavyweight formula evolved and adapted into something really chaotic and crazy. And I think that that stable itself is just an awesome thing WWE did. And we can talk about it ending too soon or never getting the great babyface run. But yeah, I'm excited.
I mean, it may be one of the best consistently booked, you know, angles ever, as far as I can tell. I mean, just kind of looking back through how WWE has booked factions like that, and from beginning to end, I mean, the Shield was booked fantastically. You know, it was crazy how, you know, how well they all grew and how well they all came across throughout that entire, you know, I guess, you know, run as the Shield. And it was, you know, the breakup came, I guess, at kind of an inopportune time, because it really felt like they were on the cusp of something as babyfaces. But I think it was really important to them to launch the Authority and that subsequent angle at the time. And maybe hindsight, they'd go in a different direction, considering how badly booked the Authority in Seth Rollins' original title run was. But I mean, as far as the Shield's concerned, I mean, it was lightning in a bottle from start to finish. And I don't know if you can capture that again, but I think it'll be a really fun nostalgia trip on Monday next week.
Yeah, I kind of hope that they are able to build it up and tease it a little bit more on Monday in the same way that they kind of did with the Rollins and Ambrose. The same way that they did with the Rollins and Ambrose final moment, you know, those moments with them for so long until they finally said, okay, now they're going to fist bump. Like, I think you're going to get it all on Monday, but I hope that they find a way to just gently pull you along throughout the show on Monday. I think it could create a really fun through line for the show. And the moment's going to be cool. The moment when you see the three of them close in on the opponents, when they do the whole jump up on the ring apron slowly thing, I think the crowd's going to lose it. I think it's going to be really, really neat and special. And obviously, I think people listening can tell I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, TLC's coming up pretty quickly, right? I mean, October 22nd. So we're going to have the TLC pay-per-view basically 2 weeks after we're going to have Hell in a Cell. And so, yeah, you're only going to have two more Raws in between now and TLC to put the Shield back together. So there will be some of it, you know, kind of rushed, and maybe they can put off the, you know, the fist bump and the final, you know, reuniting as long into next Monday as possible. But I think they're going to have to spend the go home show really selling that match and establishing, you know, the, I guess, what's at stake there. I think it's going to be tough because people look at all three members of the Shield now as main event world championship quality talents. And so presenting a threat to them with Miz, Cesaro, and Sheamus is going to require some work. And maybe they can get that done in 2 weeks. Maybe they decide to go in another direction. But I think that, you know, television is going to be crucial in making sure that match feels like something is at stake and it's not just going to be some kind of Shield, you know, complete destruction of the other three.
And that's a spot where I kind of say, hey, what if you did do a Miztourage Shield destruction first? Maybe even if you wanted to get to Braun Strowman, per se, if you wanted to use the Miz and get him out of there, I think them destroying the Miztourage on Monday's Raw, or the Raw after, you know, or a week from Monday, if you wanted to say, bump, you know, get a Raw rating saying we're going to have the first ever Shield match here, and then say, oh, and by the way, at TLC, it's Braun Strowman, Sheamus, and Cesaro against the Shield in a TLC match. I think that would be one way to do it.
Yeah, I think you could even have the Shield lay waste to Cesaro, Sheamus, The Miz, and the other two cronies, you know, because I think that's something WWE would do. You give them a moment of sheer dominance over even a numbers advantage, and then have Strowman come out and tip the tables, and that's where you book the match. You know, the Shield are going to demand Braun Strowman and Cesaro and Sheamus in a match at TLC instead of the other way around, because you know they'll have gotten their comeuppance from a larger opponent, and I think that works. You know, there's a way you can make that work on TV, just like your idea is plausible as well. I think there's a way you can get to TLC with the feeling that okay, this match conclusion isn't completely foregone, but it's going to take some clever work, and it's going to take them I guess a little bit more nuance than they normally show on the average Raw. But I'm willing to believe that the Shield will get the kind of creative attention that's required to do that, because they generally book them fairly well, and at least in past memory.
Do you think that this Shield reunion spins off into a different sort of story for, say, Roman Reigns and for Dean Ambrose, for Seth Rollins? Where do you see the three of them going after this? Keeping in mind, well, Roman Reigns is probably going to the Royal Rumble, where he will win and go to challenge Brock Lesnar in a match a lot of people don't really want to see.
I'm hoping that coming out of this, we're going to see a Dean Ambrose heel turn. I don't know exactly how they get there yet, but I think him abandoning his Shield mates would make for the best possible outcome here. I don't think Seth Rollins is in a position where another heel turn for him would do him any good. And I don't believe Roman Reigns will ever, turn heel as long as Vince McMahon has him on this pedestal that he's seemingly on. And so, I think Dean stands the most to gain from a heel turn and from breaking up the Shield this second time. I don't know when that'll be exactly, but I'm assuming it's going to be fairly soon. I don't anticipate them being together for a long period of time.
Yeah, I like the idea of an Ambrose heel turn coming out of this a lot. I also like it because if Ambrose does his job well and is the hateable guy that we've never gotten to see him be, I don't think the grammar in that sentence was altogether correct. But if he's that guy, he can get Roman Reigns over. I think Roman Reigns will never be more popular than when he's standing next to Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, because people do remember the Shield so fondly. And I do believe that we're going to get something kind of neat out of this. Not a chance necessarily to get Roman Reigns cheered, because I still think he'll get booed out of the building when he wins the Royal Rumble. But it's a chance to remind people, oh yeah, Roman Reigns is that guy from the Shield, and we liked that guy. And I think that'll be really nice. And if Ambrose can get booed, then they can make people care about Roman Reigns in a way. I would say one of the weaknesses of the Roman Reigns character, who's his big opponent? Who is the large heat garnering foe that has stood across the ring from Roman Reigns at any point? I'm having trouble thinking of one. I mean, Braun Strowman was so destructive and awesome that people loved him. You look at a Triple H at one point, and people were just kind of tired of it. And it even seemed like Triple H didn't really want to be in that WrestleMania main event that he was thrust into when everyone and their mother got hurt. So I think Reigns could actually benefit a lot from a solid foe in Ambrose, especially if Ambrose is the guy to break up the Shield this time.
Well, do you want to know my opinion on who will end up being Roman Reigns' main foe after WrestleMania next year?
Is the answer Roman Reigns?
The answer is Kevin Owens.
That's very possible.
I think they'll move him back to Raw post-WrestleMania, and he'll probably still be going on a tear as a heel, whether it's still attacking the McMahon family or he'll have moved on to Sami Zayn or Shinsuke Nakamura or
whoever. Yeah, do they move Sami with him, since Sami is just storyline attached to Kevin Owens for life?
They're cufflinked forever. Yeah, that, I guess, is the way it works there. But I don't know how that will end up working out. But I think they haven't put over a heel as strong as they put over Kevin Owens in quite some time. And I think they're grooming him for that position post-WrestleMania to be the guy who can go after Roman Reigns and still get booed.
I think that is a great theory, and they had some fun matches. I saw them main event a house show here in Southern California on like the Christmas tour, and it was a lot of fun. So I do believe that they can do a lot of great work together again. And that's a really good post-WrestleMania prediction. Well,
but between then and now, it's Ambrose possibly, Strowman, and then post WrestleMania maybe Owens. That's all I can think of.
Maybe you use up heel Ambrose on Raw, and then you move him to SmackDown to be the top heel on that brand. Kind of let him reset. You can go back to Ambrose and AJ Styles, which was fun, even though it went on for a while. And now you've got devious Ambrose against good boy Styles, and I think that could be delightful as well. So. That's some solid thought processing right there. Yeah, and I think that'll wrap it up for us today. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. For more, please subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review, show us that you appreciate us, and if you want even more content, check out ProWrestling.net's membership option.